since 1984. Insurance, main care, Dirigo, and self-pay accepted. MabelWadsworth.org.
There is genuinely something wonderful about a volunteer-powered radio station right here in our own community. It's a great way to stay connected. There are not very many communities that are so blessed. WERU makes us feel like we have lots of great neighbors who care about our community. Here at WERU, it's about the music. Your music, plain and simple. 100 unpaid volunteers play over 800 different artists a week without any ads. It's amazing when you think about it. Folk, blues, jazz, country, rock, and everything in between. Maine artists, New England artists, and even local artists from right here in our communities. Some artists are household names. Some artists only known to the people in their household. You know, Pete Seeger would probably call WERU Radio Hootenanny, because it's about connection for you and or any local business trying to grow and service their community. You see, grassroots local community radio only happens because of you. It's only because of you that we're on the air. So I hope in your busy day today, you'll take a moment and give us a call. 1-800-643-6273. Every little bit helps. For less than the cost of a monthly movie ticket, you can sign up and make a world of difference. So give us a call, 1-800-643-6273. That's 1-800-643-6273. And we'll show you how easy it is.
Support for WERU comes from Penelope Shar, MD, integrative medicine practice in Bangor offering detoxification, intravenous vitamins, bioidentical hormone therapies, and more on the web at optionsinhealing.com or 217-8878.
It's 10 o'clock and you are tuned to WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online everywhere at WERU.org. Power for the People with your host Steve Call is up next.
Good morning. This is Power for the People. My name is Steve Call, your host for the next hour. And I do want to say Power for the People was intended to be a bit of a double entendre when we came up with the name for the show. This being Pledge Week, however, I think it's a triple entendre because, as the previous announcement just said, this is the volunteer-powered radio. So more ways to look at Power for the People. Please, if you're interested in giving, give at WERU.org or call 1-800-643-6273. And I do want to say that's the call-in number for pledging, and we'll give you the call-in number for this program in just a moment. Our guest today is a very special guest, is Alan Caron. He's the founder and president of Envision Maine, and their website says that they are promoting Maine's next economy, and they are appropriately wanting to engage entrepreneurs, innovators, visionaries, and doers to come up with that next economy. So welcome, Alan, and give me a little bit more background about what Envision Maine is all about.
Well, it's really, well, first, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing the show. What a terrific station this is. So I hope people are calling in all day to support it. There's a big disconnect in Maine right now, and has been for some while, between the folks who are wringing their hands about how terrible it is here, and the folks who are actually out every day doing things, just like you and 100 others are doing in this station. Envision Maine is really a sort of organic grassroots effort to connect the folks who have an optimistic view of Maine, who believe in Maine people's ability to build the next economy, and who are actively doing it every day.
All right. Well, that's certainly there's no question that we are in desperate need for a positive approach and some cheerleading that we don't always necessarily get from our leaders. And so I certainly that mission makes an awful lot of sense. This program in particular is going to be talking about the next Maine economy. And in my view, and as we've talked before the show and as part of the invitation for the show, the energy economy is intricately linked to the future of the state.
Right. Right.
And it certainly seems to me that the first state in a particular region to really get the renewable energy, or sorry, the independent energy thing under control is going to have a huge advantage. Recently, Hawaii's been in the news because they have a policy to become energy independent. They're the most fossil fuel dependent state in the country, but they're moving in rapid fashion towards renewables and energy efficiency. And their governor has shown the leadership to say we're going to become energy independent by 2045. Frankly, I expect to be dead by then, and so I'd love to see the state of Maine do considerably better than that and do it sooner than that. And so one of the things that we do want to talk about is how we can get government and the private sector and the nonprofit sector to move us forward on energy policy. I want to give a quick overview on how you see your organization's mission intersecting on the energy policy side in particular.
Well, one of the things we're doing right now is completing a book that will be out this fall called Maine's Next Economy, How Mainers Are Bootstrapping Their Way to a New Prosperity. And the premise of that book in a number of different areas, including energy, is that we need to build a bottom-up economy in Maine, driven by innovators, entrepreneurs, artists, dreamers, inventors, as you said in the introduction. And this parallels really what we believe about energy, that we need to decentralize the production of energy, that we need to be thinking more about rooftops and hilltops at a residential and single business scale rather than massive power production centralized in big and often dirty operations that is then cutting swaths of forest land to deliver it to homes and businesses. So the energy future we envision is similar to the economic future we envision, in which we have far less reliance on large companies that are going to come here to save us if we throw hundreds of billions of dollars or millions of dollars at them. That's an idea that's been stuck in our heads for a long time, the idea that our salvation will come from somewhere else. It will come in the form of big companies that will produce thousands of jobs. We've been chasing that dream really for about half a century at least. We've poured hundreds and hundreds of million dollars into trying to rebuild that kind of economy. And our approach is let's stop doing that. Let's stop thinking in that way. Let's invest in ourselves. Let's reallocate our energy and resources to the little guys, to the people who, if every small company in Maine produced one new job next year, we'd have more jobs than people. It's a very simple thing. So there's a great parallel between what you're talking about in energy and what we believe, and also what has to happen in the economy as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, to continue that analogy, if everybody replaced one incandescent bulb with one CFL or put one solar panel on, again, you can continue on that kind of line of reasoning. So hopefully our listeners see that this is a big picture policy discussion we're having here, and we'd certainly love to get your input. I'd love to hear it personally, and even in terms of driving future programs, and Alan would certainly love to hear it as well relative to his organization. And I do want to mention that your organization is a member-based organization.
Yes.
So that's we might come back and chat about that as well. So the call-in program phone number for this program in particular is 1-866-625-9378. That's 866-625-WERU. That's the call-in program phone number for this program. And we'll try not to confuse people too much with the pledge drive numbers, which are going on at the same time as well. So again, please give us a call. So tell us how the member-based organization is working and what kind of membership you have and the type of activities that Envision Maine is doing at this point.
Well, aside from this book that I just mentioned, mostly what we do is convene conversations. We just did something a few months ago at Bowdoin College, for instance, about 350 people.
And I was there.
And you were there. With over 30 statewide organizations as partners. We do a lot of partnering and collaboration. What was unique about that event, which, by the way, was about climate and Maine's economy, was that we had the state's largest chambers of commerce and largest environmental organizations and largest energy organizations, all participating in a conversation about climate change, energy, and the future. So that's part of what we try to do, is break down some of the barriers to the conversation, get beyond the partisan split that happens on so many issues, and get people talking to each other. So as you remember, we had over 30 speakers, I think, many of them doing 3 to 5 minutes only, which is great fun. We call it the mosaic effect. Get a lot of different voices, get them all out. And it was a fantastic time. So we do a lot of that. We have another one coming up in November. We do an annual summit on Maine's Next Economy, which will have entrepreneurs and innovators and investors and grassroots folks talking about, again, how do we take matters into our own hands on the economy? How do we stop waiting for somebody else to do it and acknowledge that we're doing it? And we're doing it in a variety of fields, ranging from agriculture to technology to solar installation, all across the state, hundreds and hundreds of small innovators and entrepreneurs who are building the foundations of the next economy.
And I do want to comment in support of what you just said about the Bowdoin Conference on the economy and climate change. It wasn't a few talking heads, shall we say. It wasn't a half-hour academic presentation. There were 30 speakers, and people got up and gave us little snippets of solutions. And, you know, to me, let's not whine about the problem. Let's offer some nice.
Yeah, I like to say, you know, what's the? If I'm a lifelong Mainer. I grew up in Central Maine in Waterville, from a blue collar family there. And one of the things I like to say is the most present question in Maine is, to me, the one I hear most often is, "What are we going to do about it?"
Mm-hmm.
There's a division in the state between the people who want to talk about how we're cold, remote, expensive, disorganized, just terrible, terrible, terrible place, and the folks who are asking, what are we going to do about it? What are we doing about it? So those folks are people that we're trying to galvanize and move forward to sort of get over the attitude of, oh, woe is us, and we can't do anything, to the attitude that you find among entrepreneurs every day, which is, we love this place. We love the people here. And we've done great things in the past. We'll do great things in the future. Let's get to work.
You know, I recall from looking at your website that the word nonpartisan shows up a few times, and yeah. Reaching across the aisle, getting collaboration between the parties, which seem to be warring with each other in most other places, than collaborating, is something that you guys can certainly do. And on the very positive side, I do want to say, in my view, with maybe a notable exception or two in the state of Maine, we're more partisan, more collaborative between parties than a lot of other places, especially.
Well, I think we have been at least until, you know, 5 years ago, when the dark cloud descended upon Maine as far as collaboration. You know, climate's a great example. We used to have a big conversation about climate here in Maine. It was centered in Augusta. But it had scientists at UM and other places, all the folks who were at our summit, and we had a plan, and we kept looking at it and revising it, tinkering with it. That all shut down 5 years ago. One of the reasons we're having to do this as citizens now, the reason why we had the Bowdoin conversation, is because it's not coming out of Augusta. And so leadership's coming from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Now, it'd be awfully nice, both in the economy and in the energy world, if the folks doing it from the bottom up got a little help from the top down. That's when things really happen. Your Hawaii example is a perfect illustration. There have been many others. And every major movement for change in the country, is, in my opinion, in our history, has started from the bottom up, but eventually had top-down help from the executive and the legislature. That's the piece we're missing right now. There's no question about it, and it's hard to succeed. Solar installation, encouraging more solar development, remains a great example. I mean, it's happening, as you know better than most, all across the state in different ways. Community solar, residential solar, kind of buying clubs like we have in Freeport. Lots of different innovations for how to do it. But we don't have any incentives for it. And last I checked, the only state in New England that doesn't. So we're tired of change that's we're bumping into our own elected leadership. So that will have to change at some point, and I'm persuaded it will.
Well, and relative to jobs in the economy, there's one of the major solar installers, which is arose out of Maine and is working in both Maine and New Hampshire. Revision Energy, I think we can probably say the name. They were on this program a couple of weeks ago. They're projecting that they're going to double in size this year. Yeah. And guess what? All of the jobs are going to be added in New Hampshire, because there's such an anti-solar policy here in the state.
And Phil Koop, who's one of the co-founders of that company, is on our board of directors.
Right,
so,
right.
And is one of the co-authors of the book, by the way. Yeah. So I've got a lot of different folks who are specialists in different areas who are offering their chapter, ranging from energy to climate to agriculture to building an entrepreneurial culture in Maine to education. So, look, what's happening in energy is what's happening to the larger economy, which is we've been stalled. In some ways, we're going backwards. And it shouldn't surprise us. I mean, we have... Maine has an enormously strong brand. We're known for quality, wholesome materials. It starts with L.L. Bean. It goes to the Maine lobster. It goes to many other, Burt's Bees, all of the things that Tom's of Maine, all the things that we're known for around the country are quality things. And what's the message we've been putting out to the country in the last 4 or 5 years? Don't come to Maine. This is a horrible place. Can't educate the kids. A terrible place to do business. It'd be like in a column I did, too. Imagine you and I are running a restaurant, and people are coming in, and you're saying, well, thanks for coming. I hope we don't have any food poisoning problems tonight. We had some yesterday. Well, that business would have a for lease sign in the front window pretty quickly. And we've been doing the equivalent of that, I think, in Maine for the last 4 or 5 years, and it has hurt our brand. And again, our reputation nationally isn't important because some big national General Motors is going to come in and create 10,000 jobs. No, but it's important for the young entrepreneur that we want to migrate to Maine, or the immigrant that we want to come to Maine, that we not be sending a signal to the world that this is a miserable, horrible place to live in and do business. Again, big disconnect, because most of us, I think the majority of people in Maine are here on purpose.
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So just a reminder, our phone number is 1-866-625-9378. That's 866-625-WERU. And Alan is, I think the bottoms-up approach makes an awful lot of sense. You've been a mover and shaker, certainly, with Envision. What about, tell us a little bit about founding Grow Smart Maine.
Yeah. Grow Smart was a nonprofit that I created prior to this one back in 2003. Still going strong. I left it in, I think, 2008. Most known, I think, for us getting the Brookings Institution to come to Maine to write something called Charting Maine's Future, which had a terrific impact in Maine, including about 130 gatherings around the state, and 30,000 of them read. And it was kind of a roadmap. And what Brookings said in that report is, look, this is at 30,000 feet. Now you folks got to go fill in the details. And so that's really the work that I'm doing now with Envision Maine, taking that piece of the Brookings report that was about the next economy, or what they call the innovation economy, and taking it to the ground and building the kind of organized effort we need to make it happen.
I guess we have a phone call coming in. We do. Let's come back to the Brookings report, because I think that's certainly very relevant. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Nick from Waldoro.
Hi,
Nick. Nicholson, and you've been touching on energy. I I spend a lot of time in energy analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to realize that Maine is the third leading state when it comes to renewable energy as a percent of our consumption. In 2013, 69% of our consumption was renewable, hydro, wind, and wood, primarily hydro and wood, although wind is picking up. But only Montana and Oregon are ahead of us when it comes to that. And we also have the third cleanest grid in the country, so far as climate, CO2. And so when we're talking about energy, if we're concerned about climate, then we should be putting our effort into transportation primarily, because that's where the CO2 emissions are, nearly half of them for Maine. And that's followed by heating, oil heating primarily. So I just thought I'd put that out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I certainly appreciate that, and that's very appropriate to the Grow Smart Maine topic that we just had a second ago, because a big part of the Grow Smart Maine discussion was revitalizing downtowns and dealing with sprawl, and that relates very much to transportation and, and to CO2 emissions.
Yeah, well, transportation really is it, and it's the hardest nut to crack, and I think that's why nobody's dealing with it. And instead, we're saying, well, let's put up some more solar panels, but it's really transportation. Last year, twice I asked Dylan Voorhees, why should we subsidize solar? And he wouldn't answer me. At least he never did.
Well, I'd be happy to answer you on that one.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, we subsidize oil and coal and nuclear.
Mm-hmm. We don't burn coal in Maine.
I'm just on the point of subsidy right now.
We nationally, right, yeah.
We have subsidized the generation and creation of virtually every major transportation and energy industry in America. On the transportation side, I worked in transportation for some while before this and helped create a group called Train Riders Northeast that brought the Amtrak service to Maine.
Sure. Okay. That's good. Yeah.
So I'm somewhat familiar with those issues, but... You know, we wouldn't have the national oil industry, the national coal industry, even the electric grid we have nationally. We wouldn't have the railroad system, and we wouldn't have the highway system without massive public subsidies.
That doesn't answer my question about why we should subsidize solar. Just because we've done something in the past doesn't mean we should do it for something in the future.
Well,
if we're going to subsidize something, let's subsidize something having to do with transportation and or heating.
And your argument would be that if we transfer the burning of oil or the burning of wood to the generation of solar power on rooftops, that that's not a worthwhile investment, social investment in terms of climate change. You're the one that raised the climate change issue. I would submit to you.
That could be the only reason I can see to use solar, but we don't.
It's not the only reason. It's not
the
only reason. There are lots of other reasons to do solar. One is that we have abundant sun in Maine.
We don't. Let me stop you right there.
No,
our capacity factor in Maine, by a report from ISO New England, a working group report, we have the worst capacity factor in New England, 12.4%. And so don't. Please don't say that. We
what
don't
is a
have
solar
abundant sunshine.
What's the solar equivalent of Maine in Europe? Do you have any idea?
Oh, Germany's even worse.
Yeah, of course it's worse.
Right.
But what are we equivalent to?
The
Southern France.
The interesting thing is Germany just set a record the other day. I believe it was 78% renewable energy for an entire day. So Germany can pull it off.
They were 69% for an entire year in 2013.
Right. Let me come back and answer your question about solar from just my personal perspective.
Sure.
So I drive a plug-in Prius, and I'm disappointed that it doesn't have more range than it does, but I have solar on my place, and I plug my Prius in, and therefore I am getting off of fossil fuels entirely for the portion of that driving that I do on the Prius that is battery-powered.
When you plug it in, is the sun shining when it's being charged?
Well, I'm running a significant credit with the utility anyway, so it doesn't matter if I'm plugging in at night or not. I'm still, in effect, using solar power. So there's one possibility, and the recent announcement by Elon Musk about household battery power is probably a game changer.
I've got solar and batteries, big lead acid batteries here.
The other thing I'd mention relative to fossil fuels, though, that does relate to any kind of renewal, but especially, Alan used the word distributed energy rather than centralized energy a few minutes ago. Again, in my example of having solar at my house, the opportunity for the state of Maine to move off of heating oil to air source heat pumps is absolutely incredible. And I've had an op-ed published a couple of years ago in the Bangor Daily News where I hypothesized that if the lifetime of an oil burner is 20 years, if we establish policies and good marketing and good communication relative to electric-fired heating options in 21 years, we could be fossil fuel-free. We could be heating oil-free. So there's just a couple of examples of why solar works.
How are you going to power those heat pumps at night when it's colder?
Well, I mean, if you've still got net metering, which of course has been called into question by the current administration, then you can draw down on your credit from the utility to fire those at night.
No, but the physical fact of what is going to be powering those heat pumps at night on cold winter nights, what's going to be powering them? You're going to be powering them with conventional generation.
Or you could be powering them with wind.
Plus, that's true, but we're going to need a lot more wind to do that. But then there's the other thing that bothers me about the heat pumps is that it's only going to be natural for people to use those heat pumps as air conditioners in the summer. And we're already summer peaking, and it's going to add to that.
Well, I did a study in my previous employer that if the state of Maine had policies such that we had rooftop solar on any roof that has proper exposure, we could meet 56% of our power needs from solar. And when the air conditioners are running is when solar is doing its thing. So the air conditioners aren't cranking away at midnight. They're cranking away at 3 in the afternoon when the sun is shining.
No, that's true. I agree with that, sure. All right, well, it's been an interesting conversation.
All right.
But I do want you to realize, and I want everyone else to realize, that we're already third in the country when it comes to renewable generation as a percent of our consumption.
And that's something that we should be proud of and that the governor should be touting and should be discussed in the legislature without a doubt.
The governor knows about it. Yep. Well, Patrick Woodcock knows about it. I talk with Patrick. Patrick's a good guy. He's doing the best he can in a difficult situation.
Right. Well, I appreciate your perspective.
Okay.
And
thanks, Colin.
We want to have all perspectives, certainly. Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks a
lot. Thanks, Nick.
Bye.
All right, we were talking about the Brookings report a little bit, and I'll be somewhat provocative here and just say that I actually looked at the Brookings report last night, which I did think was an incredible report and vision. But again, as you said, it laid out some principles and some approaches and said, now you actually got to do it rather than just talk about it and plan. And so I looked at the report last night and searched for the word energy. And guess what? It only showed up 3 times in the report.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of reflective of the issue here in society where you pay your oil bill and you buy gasoline as a regular part of your daily function. You don't think about it, or you're paying $100 here and $50 there, and you don't want to spend a few thousand dollars to remove those bills from your budget. And so Brookings really didn't address that. Tell us how we can get there relative to your perspective on how government ought to work and what kind of policies we could put in place.
Well, there are a whole series of areas that Brookings didn't get to, and they did that by intention because I said to them when we invited them to come up here, and we had to compete with 13 other states to get them. They only do one state report every 5 years. I said, what we don't want is yet another report that tells us the 100 things we ought to do. So focus. Give us 3 things, big things we should do. We'll go figure out the details later. So there are a number of areas that got sort of filtered out there. Part of the problem we have, again, in both the economy and energy is we subsidize big things all the time. We do not subsidize, and in fact, many people in politics actively work to make sure that we don't subsidize small things. Rooftop solar, perfect example. We can get the ratepayers to pay for massive expansions of delivery systems. for the power companies, and there's hardly a ripple about it. Not seen as a subsidy, but we do it. And it is a subsidy, of course, because we're paying in advance. We're insuring profitable initiative by a major company. So Maine, on the economy side now for a moment, the taxpayers of Maine invest about $500 million every year in tax breaks for jobs. And it hasn't been working out too well. So our basic premise is, great, okay, so we're investing $500 million every year in tax breaks, most of it going to companies that aren't delivering what they promised. Let's redirect that money to the little guys. Let's redirect it to 10,000 entrepreneurs who agree to create one job, or 100,000. We would take the same approach on energy. You know, we have been subsidizing the centralized big guys for a long time, and now let's redirect some of that energy to solar, particularly solar. You know, I want to amplify a point you just made. What is happening with solar in the last 5 years, I think a lot of people haven't caught up with. The enormous reduction in cost of rooftop solar has made it more affordable and brought it to a price point that's roughly equivalent to other sources. But the new development that I think you just mentioned is the development of battery technology. When we can get to the point, and Musk company is now preliminarily talking about household battery storage at $3,500 or so. When we can get to the point when a new house built automatically has solar panels and a battery that would sustain the needs during the evening or during rainy days, and then the grid is a backup where we pour excess in the summer, when we're producing more power than we can use, it goes into our account, as now happens, with some limitations. Now we've got redundant backup systems, and we have the possibility, really, for the first time since we all depended on wood stoves, for a completely decentralized energy production system without much delivery. You need to deliver the excess, the overflow, and be able to deliver it back should you need it. But with good solar arrays and battery backup, in a very relatively short period of time, we're going to be able to see a huge change in Maine.
Let's come back to that and talk about financing and incentives. But for now, we have a person on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, this is Jim from Burnham.
Yeah, hi, Jim.
Hey, really liking what I'm hearing from you guys this morning, and actually had to stop my sanding so I could listen better. I do own a woodworking business, and I do feel that you know, one of the solutions to improving the economy in Maine would be to make it dead simple, like dead simple, to hire somebody. I tend not to do that because it just adds a complexity that I don't want to deal with. And the caller beforehand said, you know, Maine solar, no good. 30 years ago, I built a passive solar house for myself without really having any expertise at it, and it works wonderful. I don't expect it to do what Florida might, but, you know, for here, I burn 2 cords of wood and have heat coming in from the sun for free. So that's a good thing. But I wanted to ask you, I get my insurance through Maine Community Health Options, and I'm wondering if, you know, a lot of solutions require legislation. A solution to improve the economy of Maine would be for everybody to jump on to getting their insurance through Maine Community Health Options. Would that keep a raft of money in the state that is otherwise going away when they other folks are using Anthem or other companies? So I'd like to hear what you have to think about that stuff, and I'll get off the air. Thanks.
All right. And I appreciate that. That's not exactly an energy question, but it certainly fits into your Envision Maine. Let's take a couple minutes to talk about that, and let's get back to the phone calls right after
all
that.
All right. Well, look, I think that's a great organization, and it's been enormously successful, and I hope people are signing up every day. I think the larger question, as we see it, is we cannot build an entrepreneurial economy in Maine as long as people are holding on to jobs because that's the way they get health care. We have to make health care so widely available that people who are inspired to build new companies, start new things, don't have to be fearful that they're going to lose their health care. That has been holding not only Maine's economy but the U.S. economy back for decades. So our position is we have to have, however we get to it, universal, affordable health care for everyone. And we will find that as that happens, people are freed up to leave the job they're stuck in and build the dream they have.
And one of the interesting things that came out of Massachusetts that, oddly, the Obama administration hasn't touted, when Governor Romney passed the precursor to Obamacare down in Massachusetts, the data showed that people were leaving their jobs because they had alternatives for health care and, indeed, starting new businesses. So very, very important point.
You know, and it's one of the reasons why people don't want to hire. I mean, it's a hard thing for a small company to take on. You want your employees to be well compensated. You want them to have good benefits. But when the cost of health care is as high as it is and the cost of insurance is as high as it is, it stifles development of new companies and new jobs.
Right. Just a reminder, this is Pledge Week here at WERU, and the pledge phone, not to be confused with our call-in line, is 1-800-643-6273, or you can pledge online at weru.org. The call-in number for this program specifically to be on the air with us is 866-625-9378, and that's 866-625-WERU. And I believe we have at least one caller on the line. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the chance. It's David here calling from Brooklyn. I'm encouraged by your tendency toward smallness and the details. I'm thinking perhaps that the state itself may be too large an entity for us to reach the degree of smallness which it's going to take for us to be able to break free of the large corporate concerns, which are not only controlling our national economy, but as you suggested, also controlling our state economy as far as who gets subsidized, et cetera. I just think the more we can get into a system where we're doing for our local community selves what needs to be done without even having to rely on the state. I mean, this is what happens when people stop serving us, we stop using them. And, you know, they may be able to provide, the state may be able to provide universal health care for its citizens. That's something perhaps the state could do. But, for example, you talk about on the grid, selling your excess power to the grid. To me, that's a red light. The grid, as I understand it, that Maine is hooked into with all of our good green energy production is mainly supplying people with very gray energy production in Connecticut, New Brunswick, and a couple other places I can't remember or don't know in the first place. I haven't studied it very closely. But the grid in Maine is far too big in my way of looking at it in the first place. And I have no interest in supporting it. In that end, toward that end, I would really advocate the battery technology. My vision is a local battery exchange station in every town where people can leave charged batteries, which they don't need for their own use, and people can take charged batteries, which they do need for their own use. The batteries are not owned. They are contributed by the community out of its largesse because, as you say, it's fairly easy nowadays to charge batteries by the sun or even by small wind-powered rigs, which we can cobble up in our workshops. We know how to do this. We live in Maine. And the people that we could study from, the natives here, know how to do it far better than I do. So I'm just really encouraged by what you're saying about small. One of the things about a good piece of art is that the closer you get to it, the more details you see, the more it intrigues you, the more you're drawn into its the beauty of its complexity. And I don't want our espousal of smallness to stop at the state level. I guess that's my say.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. And I think your endorsement of the bottoms-up approach and the local community approach makes a lot of sense. It's very consistent with what Alan's been talking about here. And frankly, just a quick comment on my part, I think when we get a local community that takes the plunge and becomes energy independent itself, the community, through the bottoms-up approach, people are going to take notice. Other communities are going to take notice. The state is going to take notice. The bottoms-up leadership will help push the leadership in the state of Maine to realize the potential advantages here. And we are working on things like that in a number of communities. Freeport is one you mentioned a moment ago where you're doing group purchase for solar in the Unity area. Now Unity collaborating with Sustain Mid-Maine is looking at another group purchase type of approach. So that's the way we can get to that. One quick comment, since you mentioned a battery exchange. In fact, I don't believe this has happened yet, but Elon Musk's group, the Tesla group, is talking about instead of pulling up to a gas station and plugging your car in, you would pull up to the gas station and switch out your battery. And so you'd refuel with your electric vehicle in 1 minute. And that seems like it's really the way to go. Let's feel free to comment on that in a moment, Alan, but we've got another caller on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, my name's Elise, and I'm just calling to add to the conversation. I think it's wonderful to think about how to decentralize our energy system and make our local communities more independent. But I think a big piece of this that hasn't been discussed too much is sometimes the cheapest energy is energy you don't use. And so energy conservation and energy efficiency are a huge piece of developing resiliency in our communities. And, you know, talking about bottoms-up approach, we can start with that by making our homes more efficient, doing the weatherization and the, the energy upgrades in the home, in the public buildings, in the restaurants, in the convenience stores. All those things can free up dollars that our local economies have to save for the utility bills and free it up for investment in entrepreneurship or education or the public parks, et cetera. So I just wanted to make sure we threw that into the mix.
Right.
And just so you know, one of the things we're proud of at Evergreen Home Performance, we're based in Rockland. That's a company I'm partners in, is trying to engage with communities to develop that kind of base of resiliency right here at home. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the work you're doing, and you're absolutely right. That's where it starts first and foremost, and then the next question is how do we take control over the generation of energy, and that's really what we're talking about, is getting it to the household level.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges, and we alluded to it a few minutes ago, one of the challenges is that people pay their electric bill and their heating bill, and it's just part of their budget. And so they don't think about the issue of how they could be saving money over 20 years versus just paying the bill today. And frankly, I think that's one of the things where it requires more communication from organizations like yours, but it also requires incentives and policy changes at the state level, without a doubt.
Yeah, so, I wanted to go back, if we could, for a minute to this question of should we just do it all ourselves and forget about the state? And our response is, you know, all of the innovation really comes from the small units. It's the innovation in the economy, the innovation in energy in a lot of ways. There are instances where the big corporations do the innovation. They certainly can capitalize a rapid development of things. But real change tends to happen from the bottom. Now, in a state like Maine, we're sending an awful lot of our money every year to the state, which has a budget of about $3 billion a year. We ought to be concerned that that money is being properly deployed in ways that help us most. So we have to have roads. We have to have decent schools. Lots of things that we can't do simply at the local level have to be done on a larger scale. Our concern is about $500 million of that $3 billion that's going to the creation of jobs, and we think it's largely being wasted. So we can't afford to be indifferent about that. Again, if you imagine $500 million a year being given to small businesses and startup entrepreneurs in Maine with the pledge that they each create one job, we will see rapid economic change in Maine, and it will be sustainable change. It's not going to be something that comes and goes on the whim of some corporate meeting in New York. So that's the only intersection that we're most concerned about, state and local, is where's that money going? How is it working? And how do we take money from what is failing and put it into what is succeeding?
It makes a lot of sense. Thank you. Just a reminder that that our guest today is Alan Caron, who is the president and founder of Envision Maine, an organization promoting Maine's next economy. The phone number for this program is 866-625-9378, and that's 866-625-WERU. So the point was made a few minutes ago relative to, and we've actually made it several times here, relative to centralization versus non-centralized distributed energy. And one of the issues to me that makes a lot of sense relative to subsidies and ways government can quietly incentivize things in the background without controlling anything relates to the fact on the centralized side that both of our major electric utilities in the state are owned by out-of-country entities. And so whatever profit they're making is going out of state, out of country even. And the opportunity to own your own power plant at your own home, be it wind or solar or dealing with efficiency, as the previous caller just said, going to be a huge advantage for the economy.
Yeah, and I think the more of us that do it, as with every other new emerging technology, it's extremely expensive at the beginning, and you have pioneers who can afford to do it, and they do it, and then over time the production increases, the cost goes down, the efficiency goes up, and that's what's happening now with rooftop solar. Mm-hmm. And we're installing our system in just about 3 weeks now, it was a big stretch for us. And it's still there's still more that has to be done, but we just see it as a cost of maintenance of the house. And, of course, those panels are going to generate power for 40 or 50 years. They'll be paid off within a decade. And we're looking at another 30 or 40 years of essentially free power. Mm. So the more of us who can afford to do it, those who can afford to should do it. Because the more we have, the more people will see it. They'll talk to their neighbors, they'll talk to family members, and we're going to see an explosion of this technology across Maine. Mm-hmm. I want Maine to lead the country.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have another, and we do want to come back to this in just a second, solar financing, but we do have another caller on the line. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning. It's the Analog Anarchist from Dover Foxcroft. I've been off the grid for 40 years. I've been following all these issues. You mentioned the foreign-owned electric utilities in Maine and across the country. This was a cornerstone of neoliberal reform. Our legislature mandated that. The elephant in the room, besides storage we're talking about for electricity, is the Internet and the necessity of the Internet. I have a computer. I don't keep it on all the time. Most people with utility power run it all the time because, A, it takes so long to boot up. You're using, I boot it up like five times a day if I'm using it. The time and the energy to run that boot is, you know, that cost electricity out of the sun. And the latest iteration of Windows, it wants constant update, and you can't even opt out of the updates. So you've got to be online getting your antivirus updated, getting this updated, getting that updated. It is now becoming a major portion of my energy bill for, off-the-grid solar power. And across the country, I read somewhere that the biggest single use of electricity in the United States is running computers. it's not a free deal. I mean, this is it takes energy to do that, and so much of the stuff that you do on your computer is a waste of time. Poorly designed programs that take so long to figure out how to work or get them to go right or get them to even go. Your comments. Thank you.
Well, wow. It's hard to know how to respond to that one because it's hard to argue with the issue of computer problems. No question about that. Any comment there, Alan?
That is a lot. I'm just in the process of upgrading to Windows 10, and I'm frightened to death of how many weeks it's going to take me to get it all to work. But I have to say I love the title, the analog anarchist title, and it reminded me someone asked a few weeks ago, what's the fundamental problem in Maine right now? And I said, well, there are two. One is we have a bad attitude, but the other one is we've got an analog government in a digital world.
Mm, yeah. We have another caller on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, I'm calling. This is Paul calling from Hamden. And I'm calling in reference to the issue of subsidies for various energy programs. And probably the biggest subsidy that's out there is the free ticket the fossil fuel companies have for polluting our environment. Not only the carbon dioxide emissions, but the other co-generated pollutants have a significant financial effect and many other effects, health effects, and of course with their contribution to climate change, the financial effects from the devastation of global warming is widespread, and so there's a lot of talk about that. All that's really needed for leveling the playing field in the energy sector is to eliminate all subsidies. Solar, wind, none of them would need subsidies in order to compete very successfully with fossil fuels if fossil fuel companies had to pay for their pollution, just like anybody has to pay for their waste disposal and using a dump or other things. There's a very good proposal out there by Citizens Climate Lobby for establishing a revenue neutral carbon fee and dividend that essentially places a fee on fossil fuel use, carbon emissions, and returns all of the money to the people. So there's no increase in government, no increase in taxes, but there is a natural free market pressure away from continued fossil fuel use and towards renewable energies. And if anybody out there is not familiar with that proposal, it's on the Citizens Climate Lobby website. This is a national organization that's working towards increasing the political will for such a proposal, and it's very much bipartisan in that it, even if it had nothing to do with improving climate change, it's financially a very advantageous policy for the country, and even on a state level it could be implemented, but ideally it would be nationwide. Some states are going ahead with their own fee and dividend because the federal government has been kind of slow to be able to move forward with this, but it's estimated that it would have a tremendous stimulating effect on the economy, and that the fee and dividend as proposed would cut carbon emissions by 60% within, I think it's 10 years. I'm a little rusty on my figures, but so I just want people to be aware of that and would like you to comment on that as well.
Sure, dropping all subsidies. Alan, let me give a quick one, quick reply there, and then we'll go to the next phone call.
Well, if we could do it, it's a great idea. The problem we have, it's a subject of another show, I suspect, but we've got a circular political problem, which is that in Washington and also at the state level, the big guys are represented in the halls of power every day. And they're there to make sure they continue to get the lavish subsidies they've gotten. It's happened not only in energy, it happens in tax policy and agriculture, on and on. And the new strategy of those guys is to make sure that government can't do anything and just ensure that nothing, no meaningful change comes out of Washington. And we've seen an effort to essentially do the same in Maine, in my opinion, to ensure that no real change can happen. So we've got a bit of a problem there. In the meantime, to the extent there are subsidies, we want them to go to the regular folks, not to the guys with the big lobbyists.
And one of the challenges is that part of the oil subsidy is military spending. And talk about a lobby there. I think we still have one more person on the line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I missed the last couple calls, so I hope I'm not repeating anyone. But my primary interest is in energy storage. It seems like PV is now available at a radically cheaper cost. That storage seems to be the biggest issue right now. And I've been sort of working this sort of hydrogen idea through my mind for a long time. There's several others. But it would seem to me that that's almost a doable thing as we reduce the cost of actually producing the electricity to storing it in a small-scale cogeneration home-based kind of system. Obviously, it would have to be more in a rural area, but something that would be along the lines of an automobile where there's cogeneration, where you have a fuel that not only does it heat, does it move the car, but it also produces heat for the car. It also produces the electricity that drives all the electrical components. That hydrogen can be stored when the sun shines and PV is producing electricity to electrolyze water, and it's something that doesn't seem to get much credence. And as opposed to batteries, which, and I'm not sure about this, but environmentally sensitive folks should really be looking into the cost to the environment of producing trillions of batteries, or the equivalent of the power needed to be produced. So that would be my comment. I had one other point, too, would along the lines of small-scale and locally produced items that need to be addressed, and that would be, in my mind, agricultural fiber industry needs to be revived in Maine. Hemp would be a perfect example. Also flax. And there's so many crops that can be developed in Maine that aren't. Anyway, thanks very much.
Yep, and
thank you.
Both the crop issue and storage, I think we have to move on to the next program on that.
Yeah.
We've been speaking with guest Alan Caron from Envision Maine. That's envisionmaine.org, a member-based group about the next Maine economy. A reminder that this is Pledge Week here on WERU, and if you enjoyed this previous program, please think about giving us some resources to continue it. The phone number to pledge is 800-643-6273 or online at weru.org. This has been Power for the People. My name is Steve Colley, your host, and we are on every second Wednesday of the month at 10 o'clock to talk about your energy economy and your energy budget. Thanks for joining us, Alan.
My pleasure. By the way, if anybody can contribute $100 in the next 5 minutes, my wife and I will match that.
Wow. Now there's an offer for you. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Support for WERU comes from